year covering Maseches Kinim. I want to begin by clarifying a few things from yesterday. I may not have expressed myself accurately or correctly, so I just want to go through a few points from yesterday, then we're going to go forward. So first, in the Mishnah, in the second parak, the third Mishnah with multiple nests, 2, 4, 6, 8, up to 7 pairs of birds. When the birds flew in that particular configuration, they flew in from nest A to nest B to nest C. It's important to note that we really don't know what bird flew. We knew that a bird flew from, say, the nest of size 4 to the nest of size 6. It got there, and then successively, as we said, another bird flew from the nest of size 6 to the nest of size 8. Which bird flew from the nest of size 6 to the nest of size 8? It could either be the bird that just arrived, or it could be a bird that was already in that nest. We don't know any of that, obviously. If you want to maximally disqualify, look for, you know, you're trying to avoid any possibility of error, you're trying to establish effectively the worst case. You're trying to think through what could possibly go wrong in order to make sure that you don't allow an incorrect sacrifice. If you're trying to do that and you're thinking about this particular Mishnah, it's best to think about the Mishnah. It's easiest, I should say, to think about the Mishnah in order to maximize disqualification, to think that a bird flies from nest, say, 4 to nest with 6, and it stays there. That every flight, the bird that's flying in a particular flight, flies from a nest where it was originally to a new nest. And when it arrives in the new nest, it stays in that new nest to the end of the Mishnah. So effectively, every bird flies once. Now, since there are 56 birds and 7 nests and only 24 flights, there are enough birds to make that happen. And if you make that assumption, that simplifies a number of constructions of worst case and what happened in that particular Mishnah. Okay, second thing I want to clarify is the first Mishnah in the third parak, which was, again, a parallel to a Mishnah in the first parak, where we had equal-sized chovot, 2 and 2, 4 and 4, whatever the even number of chovot, whatever the even number of birds in a kanchova for two women that got intermingled. Now, in the first parak, we looked at what we do lechatchila. If the person consults, then we tell them to bring the amount, basically half the size of the intermingled nest. So to use our example, 6 birds Rachel, 6 birds Leah, 12 birds now exist. We tell them to bring 6 birds, 3 olot, 3 chataot, because clearly, Leah and Rachel independently could have brought 3 olot and 3 chataot. That's what they were going to do. When the nests get combined, bringing 3 and 3, there is no doubt, there can't be anything done wrong, because of the 12 birds, 3 are certainly olot and 3 are certainly chataot. It's only the fourth bird that encounters a problem. The Mishnah in this parak describes not what is done l'chadchila, but what's done effectively after the fact. And the last case is the Kohen brings all 12 birds. And what I tried to say, but I'm not sure I said accurately, is in the case where the Kohen brings all, the results are the same. In other words, the economic result is the same. Even when the Kohen doesn't consult, the last case, and for that matter, the other two cases, mechtza kosher, mechtza pasul. So you get effectively 6 valid sacrifices, regardless of what you do. So in that particular case, consulting, not consulting, you really don't gain by not consulting. You only end up with 6 valid sacrifices. In many of the other Mishnayot in this parak, by not consulting, you end up validating more birds. In other words, when you sacrifice them effectively, half olot and half chataot, you're not going to get the result that you had in the first chapter. You're going to get a better result. The example that we did yesterday of that is the second Mishnah. In the second Mishnah, you don't have equal-sized nests. You have nests of different sizes. The example in the Mishnah we dealt with was 2, 4, 6, 10, and 100. Or, I'm sorry, two birds, four birds, six birds, 20 birds, and 200. 232 birds in total. We went through that example. We went through a number of other examples. In the first parak, the Mount Kosher was the smallest number, 2. So 230 birds in that example, invalid. 2 birds, valid. In the case we did yesterday, it turned out not 2, but 200 birds were valid. And we went through a variety of other cases trying to illustrate what the Mishnah means by the term meruba, the majority, and what the term majority means exactly. In order to continue along that line, I want to mention 4 other cases. We're not going to go through them in detail. I'm just giving you numbers to use if you want to illustrate this Mishnah to yourself to get a deepened appreciation of this particular Mishnah. So, one case which is mentioned by a number of Mefarshim is 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10. So you have 5 kinim, you know, successively 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10, a total of 30 birds. Divide by 2 to make half chataot, half olot, 15 of each. You clearly cannot construct 15 from the various size nests, because all the nests are of even size. So you really have 2 choices. You can take the 4 and the 10, put them on one side, or you can take the 6 and the 8, put them on one side. When you do that, you've now disqualified half of those 14 birds, but there's one slot left on that side. So let's say you bring them all as olot, there's room for one ola left. The remaining nests, let's say we took 6 and 8, and the remaining nests are 2, 4, and 10, one of those birds in one of those nests has to be brought as an ola, the remainder get brought as chataot. If you do that, what happens? Well, again, you have 14 and 14 that have no mate, and you have 2 that are sacrificed correctly. One is an ola, one is a chatas. We don't really know which bird that is, but we know one of them is sacrificed correctly. So we have 7, 7, and 2, 16, lo and behold. If you look at the case, if you look at what's left over after you put the 6 and the 8 on one side, the 2, 4, and 10 add up to 16. That, again, is the notion of meruba. There is a paper a little over a decade ago by someone who's now become a neighbor of mine, actually, Dr. Phil Reese, on this particular Mishnah into the Taramata Journal. He uses an example of 8, 12, and 14 birds, total of 34 birds, 17 on each side. And of course, if you look at his example, it's pretty straightforward. You see immediately that 17, the way you get close to 17 is by putting 14 birds on one side. When you put 14 birds, say, as olot, then you have 3 spaces left. You can't get that close to 17 and 17. So in his case, again, you'll see 6, 3, and 3. The 3 that match up on both sides gives you 6. And then half of 14 on both sides gives you 7 and 7. Again, a total of 20. And 8 and 12, the remaining 2 nests are of size 20. Okay, enough of the examples. For those of you who want to do more examples, I'll give you, without any comment, 2 more cases to do. You can do 6, 20, 28, 28, 28, and 30. That's one case with a total of 140 birds. Or if you want a slightly more interesting case, 8, 10, 10, 10, 14, and 14. So both have 6 nests. The last one, again, 8, 10, 10, 14, and 14. And you can work those two cases. And again, you're going to see each of those cases will illustrate something slightly different. The net of all this is that merubah means the following. If you want to define exactly what merubah means, you look at the nest. You look at the nest, and what you're trying to do is you're trying to sacrifice birds in nests the same way in order to disqualify as much as possible. Again, remember, in this sort of a case, the best you can do is disqualify half the nest by being able, as we saw in the case of 2, 4, 6, and 8, to make the two sides both contain complete nests. So some of the nests get sacrificed all as olot, some of the nests get sacrificed all as chataot. That disqualifies half the birds, and that is really the worst you can do. If you can't do that, so assume for a moment there are 2 at times n birds across all the nests. In other words, all of the nests together have 2 times n birds. So they have to have an even number. So 2 times n is an even number. They have an even number of birds. N doesn't have to be even. So there are n birds that are sacrificed one way, n birds sacrificed the other way. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to arrange the kinim so they're all sacrificed either as olot or as chataot, and you're trying to put the nests together in such a way to come as close to n as possible. Now, sometimes you can get to exactly n, which was, again, the case 2, 4, 6, 8, or you can't. If you can't, there is some remainder that you can get as close to n. So in one of the first example we did this morning, you came within 1. In the second example, you came within 3. There is some difference between what you were able to disqualify and n. Take that number, add it to n, and that's the disqualification. In other words, that is the merubah. So n plus whatever you have as a gap between what you can disqualify and n is the exact interpretation of the term merubah. Okay, so that's the second Mishnah. It probably is the hardest Mishnah to accurately define, and of course to prove, you can prove this obviously mathematically very carefully, that this Mishnah is absolutely correct, precise, particularly as we defined it. Okay, let's move on. Now let's get to the way it's going to work is we're going to have a relatively easy Mishnah followed by a relatively difficult Mishnah. This is going to go back and forth 2 more times, and we get to the end of the Masechta. So now let's move on to the third Mishnah in the third parak. And Chatas Lezu Ve'elu Lezu Asachulam Lamalon Mechza Kasher Mechza Pasel. This person has a chatas, this person has an ola, the two get mixed together, so now you have basically, you have a real chatas, you don't have a konstuma, you have a chatas and an ola, and they get put together, you make them all as olot, or you make them all as chataot, mechza kasher, mechza pasul, kulam mata, mechza kasher, mechza pasul. Okay. Obviously, because half are chataot, half are olot, you happen to bring them all one way. The ones that are olot are valid. The ones that are chataot are not valid. Now comes an important point. Chetzim l'malo v'chetzim l'mata. What happens if you treat them as a kanchova, as a kanchova? You treat them as something that have to be brought half as olot and half as chataot. Then the Mishnah tells us, and this is the case that I always keep in the back of my head, even if you're doing things, so to speak, without consultation, it could turn out pretty badly. And this is the case where it turned out as badly as it could. What happens? Shteim psulos, or more generally than shteim psulos, they're all pasul. If you have a case where you have chataot and olot, and they get mixed together, and you bring them half and half, it's very possible, not likely at all, but again, even in the third parak, we're looking for the worst case. So what's the worst case? Chataot and olot get mixed together, brought as a kanchova, all the chataot get brought as olot, all the olot get brought as chataot. So what's the result? zero. You have no valid sacrifices because every chatas was done incorrectly, every ola was done incorrectly, and that's what the Mishnah says. Chatas krev ulamalan. You can assume that every chatas is brought as an ola, and ola lamatan. Every ola is brought as a chatas. So this is an important principle, and when you think about it as, you know, as it is in this Mishnah, it's a pretty straightforward principle. Now, the next Mishnah is very complicated. Not so much conceptually like the second Mishnah, like the last Mishnah, which we will deal with in the Parak, that are somewhat more complicated conceptually, computationally. This next Mishnah is complicated because of the number of interpretations as to what the case in the Mishnah actually is. So when you learn the various Rishonim and Achronim on this Mishnah, you're going to be you'll encounter a very large number of possible cases that the Mishnah is trying to address. I don't want to get bogged down, since we have a lot yet to do in this parak, with some of the more complicated cases. They're just more complicated. I want to deal with one case, the case in the Mishnah that the Balamor and the Ravid assume. It's not the case that's normally presented, but it has a number of reasons that it's a nice case to use to illustrate the Mishnah. A, because it's the simplest. And B, one of the reasons I like it is that it makes this Mishnah a very natural continuation of the Mishnah we just finished. Okay, so let's do this Mishnah according to the Balamor and Ravid. And it turns out that they both learn the Mishnah identically until we get to the last three words of the Mishnah. So what we're going to do is we're going to learn the Mishnah generally, in its general case, like the Balamor and Ravid do, and then to explain the last three words, we're going to zero in on the simplest of cases, because as you'll see, even understanding their machlokas in the simplest of cases is not entirely easy. So first we're going to learn the Mishnah exactly as they do in the general case, and then the last three words, we're going to look at a very, very basic example of how they learn the Mishnah in order to try to understand the last three words. So, Chatas va'ola stumum fereshes. So, the Balamor and Ravid, it is suggested that their girsa, the vav ustuma may not have been there, so they may have read chatas va'ola stumum fereshes. And what they mean is you have two women and two nests. So that right away simplifies things. If you look at other mefarshim, there are maybe more than two women, there are more than two nests, but the Balamor and Ravid are dealing with two women, two nests. One nest is a stuma, one nest is a mefarshes. So now think about these two women, and let's pick numbers just so that we can use something for illustration. The woman with the kan mefarshes, she has, say, a nest of size 6, 3 olot, 3 chataot that happen to be mefarshes, and the kan stuma has 4. So the two women together have a total of 10 birds, 6 and 4. Again, those numbers are arbitrary. You can pick any numbers you want, and the result in the Mishnah is going to apply. And asa kulam lamala, so now the Kohen goes and does them all lamala, that exactly like the case in the previous Mishnah, mechza kosher, half for kosher. Clearly, because the kan mefarshes half is kosher, the kan stuma half is kosher. Kulam lamata, mechza kosher, mechza pasul. So up to that point, thank God, nothing complicated. We haven't learned any new halacha that we haven't learned up to now. So the first part of the Mishnah, according to the Balamor and Ravid, is effectively all a repetition, and it's leading up to telling us the important halacha in the Mishnah, the lat chetzim lamala v'chetzim lamata. Now, what did we just learn? We learned if it was all kamen for reshes, then the kamen for reshes is entirely invalidated. In the case where you have two kinim, one mefareshet and one stuma, and now you do chetzim lamala v'chetzim lamata, ain kosher ella stuma. The entire stuma is kosher. So now you have to think about what's going on, because now suddenly you have a very, very interesting result. If you have a kamefuresh, the whole mefuresh that we just saw in the previous Mishnah can be brought entirely incorrectly. Olot is chataot, chataot is olot. But if you do that, and think about it. Now you have these 10 birds, and again, we're not going to do this in shir, but you can go try to work out various cases, or you can look in the Balamor. The Balamor explains this, I think, relatively well. It's relatively clear from the Balamor's explanation. You come very close to a mathematical proof using the words in the Balamor. In the case now where you have these 10 birds, so the 6 birds, 3 olot, 3 chataot, can be brought exactly incorrectly. Olot here, chataot here, exactly incorrectly. What happens to the other 4 stumot? If you bring the kan mefureshes exactly incorrectly, you leave over 2 slots for olot, 2 slots for chataot. The stumot go into those slots, they're all kosher. And that's what the Mishnah says. Ein kosher, ela stuma. The number of birds in the stuma is kosher. Now, realize that this does not mean necessarily that the stuma will always end up being kosher, because you could just have easily put all 4 stumot on the same side. And let's do that in this case of 6. Let's say you make all 4 stumot as olot. So you put 4 stumot on the olo side. And now you have how many slots left for olot? In our example, you have 10 birds total. You put the 4 stumot as olot. So you have room for one more olo. So what do? We put the chatos there. So now we put a chatos together with 4 stumos on the olah side. What's our yield, so to speak? Well, how many valid sacrifices do we get from those olot? The chatos is pasul, half the stumos. He got 2. Now go to the other side. On the other side, you have room for chataot. So now what do you have left? You put one of the chatos on the ola side, so you must put the other 2 chataot from the kan mefureshet on the other side, plus the 3 olot. So the two chataot are valid. So you have 2 valid chataot, and you have half of the kan stuma valid as well. What is that? 2 plus 2, the number of the stumot. That's not obviously a mathematical proof, but that's really, if you look at the cases, that's one way to construct it as bad as it can get, by effectively invalidating as much as you can from the stuma. The other way to invalidate as much as possible is invalidate entirely the kan mefureshet. The net result of that is, I don't know exactly which of those cases occurred, but I do know that my yield, in other words, the number of valid sacrifices, will always be the number of birds in the kan stuma. This, if you'd like, is a very nice application of the previous Mishnah, and that's the way that the Balamor and the Ravid learn this Mishnah. And if you look at other ways of learning this Mishnah, you will be happy to know that we have picked effectively the easiest way to address the Mishnah. Now, let's get to the last 3 words in the Mishnah. And remember our last explanation of how we could have reached the worst case with the 10 birds, 6 mefureshet and 4 stumot. The last 3 words, v'hi mischalek es beinehem. Now, here are words that could have appeared earlier in the Masechta. They could have applied to a number of other Mishnayot, but it's relatively obvious why they appear for the first time here. The Mishnah words mean, and it doesn't tell us how. This is kind of interesting. It's divided among them. Now, why does it say that? Well, the Mishnah just told us that the number of birds, as we interpreted the Mishnah, in the stuma are valid. The 4 birds in our example are valid. Question is, who gets credit for those 4 birds? Now, we could have asked this question many times earlier in the Mishnah. We could have asked it with the Yesh Omrim yesterday, with the flying birds. with the 14 birds. Do all of them go to the woman that have the nest of 14? But here, the Mishnah is telling us, just because I told you the number of valid birds is the Kanstuma, don't assume that all of the credit goes to the Kanstuma. Perhaps some of the credit, he mischalekes by name, has to be divided among the two women. So the Balamar and Ravid effectively have a Choshen Mishpat machlokes on how to interpret v'hi mischalekes b'nehem. Now, one of the more mathematically challenging things is to work out their machlokes in cases even as complex as the 10 birds that we used in our example. And to avoid having to do that, let's dial down the complexity to the simplest case possible. And believe me, even in this simplest case, understanding what the Balamar and the Ravid mean and the nature of their machlokes, you'll gain all that we need to in terms of the intuition behind their machlokes by dialing down to the simplest case. So let's go now to what's the simplest case? I have a kama for reshet. Rachel has a kama for reshet. Two birds. Leah has a kanstuma. Two birds. A total of four birds. So you can't have two chovot getting intermingled with less than four birds. We're now at the simplest case. And now let's think carefully in this simplest case what could happen. And effectively think of it, there are in fact six possibilities, because when you do the math, you have to differentiate which kind of, the Kanstuma has two birds, you know, Stuma 1, Stuma 2, and you have to deal mathematically, not halachically, with the two birds as being distinct. So for those of you who've taken probability, you want to in a probability course, one of the complex things that you always have to deal with is things that are effectively the same from one point of view. When are they treated as different, and when are they treated as the same? We'll get to another example of this in a second, but I don't want to obviously deal with that. So I'm going to say three cases. For those of you who are more mathematically oriented, there are really six cases, forgive me. By looking at three cases, we'll understand what's going on. So let's look at three cases. One case is that the two stumot are brought the same way. So if the two stumot are brought the same way, that is like the second method of disqualification that we dealt with a few minutes ago. So if the two stumot are brought the same way, then the chatas and ola are brought the same way. So if that happens, if you think of that case, then two stumot brought the same way, the kan mefureshet brought the same way, each woman has, the stuma gives one valid sacrifice, and the kan mefureshet gives one valid sacrifice. Because they're either brought as chataot or olot, we don't know, but if everything is brought the same way, each of the nests yield one valid sacrifice. What, either the chatas, the olas, mefureshet is valid, or either as an ola or as a chatas, depending on which side of the, how it was sacrificed. And again, if the two stuma are brought the same way, the stuma, one of them is valid, either as a chatas if it was brought as a chatas, one of them is valid as an ola if it was brought as an ola. The other possibility is everything is great. In other words, the stumot are brought on opposite sides, one as an ola, one as a chatas, and the ola is brought as an ola, and the chatas is brought as a chatas. So it's possible, one possibility is that all four birds, Baruch Hashem, we were makir of them successfully. The stumot were sacrificed, and one as an ola, one as a chatas, and the ola and the chatas from the kan mefureshes were both sacrificed correctly. So it's possible. So the first case, we had one valid sacrifice, attributable effectively to each of the women. In the second case, we have two valid sacrifices attributable to each of the women. The other case we have to deal with is the stumot were sacrificed correctly, one stuma here, one stuma there, but the ola and the chatas, like the previous case, where sacrifice, like the previous example in the previous Mishnah, are both sacrificed exactly incorrectly. So I have a stuma ola and a chatas ola, and I have a stuma ola, and the other ola is the chatas from the Kamen Vereshes. I have a stuma as a chatas, and the other chatas is the ola from the Kanma Fereshas. So in that case, the woman who sacrificed the kanstuma, she had two valid sacrifices. The Kanma Fereshet effectively contributes zero. So if you think about it, there are kind of three cases. One is everything was fine. One is each woman contributes one valid sacrifice. And the third case is that the kanstuma is the only one that contributes. The kamen fereshet was sacrificed entirely incorrectly. So, in two of the cases, you have exactly two valid sacrifices. In the other case, all four sacrifices are valid. Okay, that's just an illustration of what we had learned previously. Comes the Baal Amor, and the Baal Amor says like this: the woman, now they have to bring another sacrifice. Right? They got credit for two. They have to bring two more birds. Says the Baal Amor, the woman, one of the woman owning the kanstuma, says, wait a second. In all the cases that could have happened, I contributed either one valid bird or two valid birds. You, on the other hand, may have contributed zero valid birds. So here's what we're going to do. We have to bring two birds now. I for sure brought one correctly. Therefore, I'm not paying for one of the birds. One bird, Baruch Hashem, you pay for the bird completely. I am free and clear. The other bird, I'll be your shutif, we'll both pay for the bird. So according to the Baal Amor, of the resulting kan, the Baal Amor says one woman pays for a quarter of the kan. The other woman pays for three-quarters of the kan. So the Baal Amor basically says that the woman owning the kanstuma has an economic advantage over the woman who owns the kamen fereshet. Mischalekes b'neihem means that it's not divided equally. The kanstuma actually gains economically by only having to pay for one half of one of the birds, or one quarter of the entire kan. Second, comes the Ravid, and the Ravid says, no, not so fast. Let's now think down another level. Let's go back to the case. So in two of the three cases, the woman with the kanstuma got credit for both birds. So there's nothing to worry. She obviously got credit for an ola, got credit for a chatas. Says the Ravid, let's look very, very carefully at the third possibility, which is that both of her birds were sacrificed the same way, so she and the kanen fereshes each get credit for one bird. Says the Ravid, tell me, owner of the kanstuma, Rachel, who owns the kanstuma, did you bring a valid ola? And she says, I don't know. Two of my birds were sacrificed the same way. Maybe chataot, maybe olot. Says the Ravid, you can't know for sure. Maybe the kamen fereshet contributed the ola, and you gave the chatas. Therefore, when I look at having to bring now an ola and a chatas, you can't say that I brought a valid ola. You can say, enochinami, that you brought a valid bird, but did you bring a valid ola? Not sure. Turn the other way. Did you know you brought a valid chatas? Well, it's possible that the valid chatas was brought by the woman who owns the kanen fereshet. You brought a valid ola. You don't know whether you brought a chatas. You don't know whether you brought an ola. You know you brought one bird. The Baal Amor says, since you know you brought one bird, you only pay for half of the other bird. Says the Ravid, no. You don't know whether you brought an ola, you don't know whether you brought a chatas. As a result, you have to have a chelek in both karbonot. The chelek he assigns is a half. He says each of you have to pay for half of an ola, half of a chatas. The net-net, according to the Ravid, is he mischalekes b'neihem evenly. That the two women share evenly And both have to pay for half of the kan that has to be brought. So these last three words, v'hi mischalekes b'neihem, is really the, you know, if you follow the Baal HaMoreh in the Ravid, this becomes a very, very, very deep machlokes, really not so much about kinim, but about mamonis. And I'll mention just one thing, again, for those of who want to delve into some of the deeper mathematics of Maseches Kinim and get an appreciation for how the Tanoim really, really, you know the parak, you know the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, the Chachma required to articulate these halachas, it was not insignificant. Again, we're talking 2,000 years ago. So there is a commentary on Kinim by Rabbi Yehoshua Hel, I think it's called Me'enei Yehoshua, on this particular Mishnah, he kind of says, Luidi Mistafina, you know, here I am in Achron. I think he lived about 150 years ago. He was the Av Bezdin of Tells. He says, you know, who am I? I have all these Rishonim, and you should read his language on this Mishnah. It's very, very nice. He kind of said, look, these Rishonim knocked themselves out with all of these different ways of interpreting the Mishnah. We, by the way, as I mentioned, we did the simplest, the Baal HaMoreh and the Ravid. He says, you know, you have all of these Rishonim Baruch Hashem who gave you all these intricate ways of taking the case and understanding the Mishnah. He says, but, you know, if it was me and I didn't really have this wealth of literature, I would have told you that this was the case. And okay, so he comes up with another case. His case had four women, four nests, Baruch Hashem. It's a very, very nice case. And then he goes and he does something which I'll just mention, and I'll mention its impact. He says what he's going to do, and he doesn't say it this way, but what he does is he makes use of probability theory. He tries to figure out what is the probability that the various women provided the valid sacrifice. So he tries to establish a probability. And he may not do it exactly accurately. It's probably the case that his mathematics is slightly off, but that wasn't my point. It was that he innovated a completely different way of dealing with the Mishnah, basically using probability. You could argue about exactly how he applied probability theory, separate conversation. The only thing I'll tell you, which is fascinating, is if you apply his method exactly, and I might argue that his method has to be modified slightly, but that's, again, a separate conversation. But if you happen to use his method, he doesn't do that, and you apply his method, it's a very, very logical thing. You might be able to argue to do it slightly different, but forget that. If you apply exactly his method to exactly the case of the Baal HaMoreh and the Ravid, his suggestion splits the difference. He turns out to say that the owner of the Kanstuma pays for 3/8 of the Kan, and the owner of the Kan Mefereshet pays for 5/8 of the Kan. Notice the Baal HaMoreh said 1/4, the Ravid said 1/2 of the Kan Stuma. What's in between 1/4 and 1/2? 3/8. What's in between 3/4 and 1/2? 5/8. So this particular Mishnah, if you want to apply relatively modern mathematics to figure out what would be the fairest chalukah, which is what Rabbi Yeshua Heller does in his interpretation. Again, he interprets the Mishnah differently. That part is an interesting kinim conversation. Now, we're not even going close to that. What is really innovative about his pshat is he applies to the Choshen Mishpat Shaila of how to be Mischalakes, he applies probability theory. And interestingly, his result is exactly halfway between the Baal HaMoreh and the Ravid. Okay, so this is our next complex Mishnah. The following Mishnah, now Baruch Hashem, we get to do an easy Mishnah. Easy because we're going to interpret it in a way that the case is easy. So again, we're going to interpret the Mishnah one way, and we're going to pick the way that, I happen to think, you know, what does it mean that I happen to think? It happens to make the Mishnah relatively easy. Chatashin is arva b'chova, ein kosher eliminin chatash b'chova. So the first line in the Mishnah is a repeat of parak, of the first parak. It simply says, if you consult, so you have to insert in the beginning of the first line of the Mishnah a reminder that I'm now going to repeat the halacha I told you in the first parak. A chatas, remember our example, two chataot get mixed into six birds, creating a nest of eight. Ein kasher eliminin chataot shebechova, three of the six birds in the chova are kosher, the other five birds are not valid. So now, that's the case, kohen nimlach, kohen lo nimlach, and now we're going to have, the Mishnah is going to repeat itself, chatas and ola. Clearly, we don't have to go through the logic twice. Chatas and ola is completely immaterial. The halachas, you know, if you change chatas to ola, nothing is going to change. So let's do the case carefully for the first case of the Mishnah, which is chatas, and then the same applies to the second half of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah discusses ola. Chova shnayim bechatas. So chova shnayim bechatas. What does that mean? The chova is twice as large as the chatas. So let's take a simple case. The chova is size 4, and there are two chataot. Chova shnayim bechatas. So 4 chataot, 2 chataot get mixed into a chova of size twice as large, 4. So according to the first chapter, if the kohen was nimlach, they would bring 2 chataot, and 4 birds would be lost. Says the Mishnah, if they do it lo nimlach, mechze kosher u mechze pasul. You don't get 2, but you gain a little bit. Mechze kosher, not half of the chova, but half of the entire mixture. So if you consult, you get half of the chova. If you don't consult, you get half of the entire mixture. You go from half of 4 to half of 6. Why is that? Now again, we have to think through maximal disqualification. We have to try to figure out how to make things as bad as possible. If we try to make things as bad as possible, what can we do? We can take the two chataot, bring them as olot. That's the worst we can do. Kind of similar to the previous mishnayot. So you bring the two chataot as olot. What's the result of having done that? You now have on the side of the olot, you have two chataot and one stuma. On the side of the chataot, you have all three stumot. So two stumot get sacrificed opposite one olo, one chatas. That's two valid birds. The two chataot yield 0. The two stumot that are both sacrificed as chataot yield 1. So you get 2 plus 1, you get a yield of 3. That's what the Mishnah means, mechza kosher, mechza pasla. So you increase your yield by 1. Now, chatas shnayim b'chova, second case, the chatas is twice as large as the chova. Again, let's take that same case. 4 chataot get mixed into a chova of size 2. Clearly, obviously, you can do this with arbitrary sizes, and you can prove this mathematically. It all works. It really is all absolutely provable mathematically. It's really very elegant. If there is a book published by Meish Kapel about 13 or 14 years ago. He doesn't explain the Mishnah exactly using the Rishonim that I chose, but he basically goes through a very mathematical proof of every Mishnah in Kim. So those of you who really like modern mathematics, you can actually see a very, very elegant proof of every Mishnah using combinatorics. But okay, let's go back to the Mishnah. So you have 4 chataot and that are chataot, and you have an ola and a chatas. So what happens? If it was the first perek, you would get exactly one valid bird, because what can you sacrifice? The number of chataot in the chova. There were two in the chova, four chataot flew in, total of six birds, one valid sacrifice. But that's not what happened. This is now a kohen eino nimlach. Haminyan shebechova kosher. Again, you gain something. Instead of having the number of chataot in the chova, which is one, you get a total of two. So now again, let's figure out what's going on. So we have, again, six birds. We're going to sacrifice three and three. We have four chataot, and we have two stumot. What can we do? We take the four chataot. We're trying to maximally disqualify. We put three of them as olot. Immediately, from the olot side of the Karbanot, zero yield. All of the chataot were sacrifices alot, zero. What sacrificed as chataot? One chatas. So no matter how hard we try, three and three with four chataot, one of those chataot is going to get done correctly. The two stumot, there's only one place to go. They've got to go as chataot. One of them is a valid chataot. So again, the yield is not one, but the yield is two. So that is the Mishnah. Then the Mishnah does the identical case, replacing chatas with ola. V'chein ola shenzar v'chava, any kasha minyan ola shenzar v'chava, shtayim ba'ola, mechza kasha, mechza basel. So again, we see in this particular case that by not consulting, you increase your yield slightly. Okay, so that brings us now to the last Mishnah in Kinim. Now, the last Mishnah in Kinim is conceptually really not hard. It is computationally and sort of, you have to really keep track of what's going on. So by way of introduction, what this Mishnah is going to be about is a woman. She's supposed to bring a chova, and she has a baby, she's going to bring a chova, and she specifies that in addition to her chova, she is going to make a voluntary sacrifice of two olot. So she's going to bring a total of four birds, her chova, a chatas and an ola, and she's going to bring two additional birds. And then, if you'd like, things begin to go awry. And we're going to see in a sequence of cases that more and more and more and more things are, something interesting is going to happen. It's going to get more and more and more and more complex. Now, to give you a sense of what's going to happen, sometimes she's going to give the Kohen two types of birds, Torim and Bnei Yonah. The Kohen is going to get mixed up as to what he sacrificed. In fact, in the original cases, the Kohen is never going to sacrifice olot. He's going to sacrifice everything as a chova, one bird this way, one bird the other way. The woman, when she says, I'm going to bring two Bnei Yonah, and she may give the Kohen two Torim. She may forget what she said she was going to sacrifice. Sometimes she's going to give the Kohen two identical birds. All four birds will be Torim. Sometimes she'll give the Kohen four Bnei Yonah. Sometimes she'll give the Kohen two Bnei Yonah, two Torim. So the woman and the Kohen is never going to remember what he did to the Bnei Yonah versus what he did to the Torim. The woman's not going to remember what she promised to sacrifice. So the cases are going to go from the simple to more and more and more levels of I don't know what I, it's kind of, think of it as what she said he did. So she's not going to know what she said. He, the Kohen, is not going to know what he did. So you're going to have a combinations of uncertainty, both on what is said by her, what is her obligation, and then two, we're going to know what she gave the Kohen, but we're not going to know exactly what the Kohen actually did. He's not going to remember. And in each of these cases, exactly what the case is again disputed among Mefarshim. So what we're going to do in order to get through the Mishnah is, again, we're going to bias towards the simple. So we're going to do every case in its, in an approach that makes the case as simple as possible. Just to illustrate, on the very first simple case, I'll show you even in the very first simple case, there is some ambiguity as to what happened, and you could even make the first case, the simplest of case, you can begin to complicate it. What I do to the first case, you can imagine that under various circumstances, Mefarshim look at various ways that each of the subsequent cases occurred, and you can get into some very intricate circumstances for which you have to adjudicate. Okay, but we're going to, again, try to get through the Mishnah, explain the Mishnah carefully, but not enter into every complex case that could be coming up. So the first case, the woman, again, promised the chova, promised two olot, she gives the kohen two sets of kinim. He doesn't know that these are two separate kinim. He doesn't know that these are one kan chova and one kan that's supposed to be brought both as olot. He treats them both as chovot. He says, I've got a chova here. I bring one bird as an olo, one bird as a chatas, takes the second kan, treats both birds as chavot, treats neither of the birds as an adava, and brings two olot. So what's the answer? She must now bring one additional bird, obviously, right? Because he brought two birds, chatas and ola. So her ola sacrifice was supposed to be two olot. The kohen brought a chatas and ola. She is required to bring one additional ola. So that's a isha she'amra harele kancha eled. I will bring a kan when I give birth. Yolda zachar mevi'a shnei kinim achaz lenidra v'achaz lechavos. She has to fulfill her vow, and she has to fulfill her kan chava. Nisanam lakohen, she gives them to the kohen, vakohen sarach lasa, shlosh pridos lamilmala. He has to make three birds as olot, right? Two olot, and then rachas lamala, and then one pair, a ola and a chatas. Lo asa chen, he didn't do that. El asa shtaim lamata, vlo nimlach, tzricha lehavi. She has to bring od pridachas. She has to bring one additional bird. Okay. Now, before we go any further, if you read the text exactly as it reads, you can immediately have a question. Let me describe what I said the case was, and then let's look at what the case may also have been. I said she gave the kohen two nests, two birds, and he sacrificed one of them, ola and chatas, and the second one, ola and chatas. So she's required to bring an additional ola. What happens if she gave the kohen these two nests, and the kohen put the two nests together and sacrificed all four birds? So she has nest A is olot, nest B is the kan chova, or let's say nest A is the kan chova, nest B is the olot, and nest A and nest B got intermingled. I could argue, well, wait a second. Maybe her two olot were both born as chataot. And maybe her kan chova, both birds in the kan chova, were brought as what? Olot. So if that were the case, her two birds brought, her olos were brought as chataot, no valid sacrifices, and her chova was bought, were brought as two olot, missing a chatas. Right? So she now would have to bring not one additional bird, but three additional birds. So that's not the way we will interpret. Obviously, that's not what the first line of the Mishnah is referring to. It's referring to a case where the Kohen sacrificed each of the pairs, one Ola, one Chatas. That's case one. So now we go, that's now the Mishnah, and you'll see the style of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, oh, that's the case. If all the birds involved were of one type, they were all Torim, say. If what was involved were two minim, she has to bring two sacrifices. Now, why is that? She gave the Kohen two Torim, two Bnei Yonah. The Kohen sacrificed each of the pairs, obviously together, Ola Chatas. She has to bring, whatever was sacrificed first is the Chova. Whatever was sacrificed second are the two birds for her nedava, the two olot. Kohen comes, and the Kohen says, she says to the Kohen, by the way, I gave you two sets of birds. Which one did you sacrifice first? And the Kohen says, I don't remember. So she has no way of knowing whether her obligation for two olot is to bring a second Bnei Yonah, because only one Bnei Yonah was sacrificed correctly as an olot, the other was a chatas. Or maybe, no, it's the other way around. The Bnei Yonah were sacrificed as her chova, and the Torim were sacrificed for her olot, in which case she's missing a tar. So she has to bring two birds, because she said that she's going to bring a chova, and she promised to bring a neder, and she gave the Kohen two different types of birds, and the Kohen forgot what type of bird he sacrificed first and what he sacrificed second. So she has to match a second Ola to whatever the Kohen sacrificed second, and he doesn't remember. So as a result, she is responsible for one Tor and one Bnei Yonah. Okay. Now, we get to the third case. Persha Nidra. She now specifies her neder. But again, to continue with the style of everyone is going to have a senior moment and forget, I've had a few. So she specifies her karban, and she forgets what she specified. So she says, I'm going to bring as Bnei Yonah, to Bnei Yonah, as my Ola, or she said, I'm going to bring two Torim as my neder, and she forgot what she did. She hands the Kohen either Torim or Bnei Yonah, one or the other. So again, this case is relatively simple. She has to bring three Pridos. Why? Because she gives the Kohen, say, Torim. Let's just say she gives the Kohen Torim. Doesn't matter. It could be either way. So if she gave the Kohen Torim, then she has to bring one additional Tar. He sacrificed two Torim for the Chova. He sacrificed two Torim for the Ola, but he didn't bring two Ola. He brought an Ola and a Chatas. She is owing still one Ola. But she doesn't remember. She may have promised to bring two Bnei Yonah for her neder. So the Kohen brought no Bnei Yonah. So she is now responsible to bring one bird that matches what the Kohen, the four birds, in our case a tar, and two birds of the other type. So whatever she gave the Kohen, she has to sacrifice one more Ola of that type, plus two more Ola of the other type. Says the Mishnah, Mimin Echad. Oh, okay. That's if she gave the Kohen one min. Mishnei Minim. What happens now if she gave the Kohen? She forgot what she said she's going to bring. The Kohen now forgets what he did first and what he did second. She gave the Kohen two Torim and two Bnei Yonah. So the Kohen has no way of remembering whether he brought the two Torim as the Chova and the Bnei Yonah as the Nedava. Or maybe he brought the two Bnei Yonah as the Chova and he brought the Torim as the Nedava. So that she doesn't remember, the Kohen doesn't remember. But she specified. So again, if you think about it, there are four possibilities. What did she intend? What did the Kohen do? In two of the cases, she ends up having to bring, in the case where the Kohen brought the other type of bird, right? Then she has to bring two of the other bird. Because she said Bnei Yonah, and the Kohen happened to bring Torim second. So she has to now bring two Bnei Yonah. And if she said Torim and the Kohen did Torim, she has to bring one additional Tor. So she can either bring one additional Tor, one additional Bnei Yonah, two additional Bnei Yonah, or two additional Torim. The net is, in this case, this is sort of the hardest case. The cases after this are just going to get more complicated. She has to bring a total of 4 births because she doesn't know which of the situations accrued. So we take the 2 worst cases, the case where the Kohen brought what she did not specify. Okay, on to the next case. Kavanidra. Now, what this means is she basically adds to her obligation a second element. So think of this as the previous case. She specified something. She doesn't remember what she specified, but she also specified a second thing. Kavanidra means she attached, she was koveya her neder, meaning she said that I intend to bring 3 olot and 1 chatas. In other words, I want my 2 olot to be brought simultaneously or together or at the same time as my chova. So if she said previously up to this point, the Kohen can bring her chova in the morning and bring her olot in the afternoon. He doesn't have to bring them effectively successively. Chova, she says, I know I want it all done as one large group. So now, if she's koveya, the thing you have to remember that in no case did the Kohen do what she said, right? Because the Kohen did not bring a pair of olot. He brought 2, both pairs that she gave him. He treated them both as chavot and brought an ola and a chatas. So the Kohen, in terms of her second obligation, she made one obligation to bring 2 olot. Her other obligation was to bring 3 olot at the same time. The second obligation, the Kohen absolutely did not satisfy. He also, right, because she, even if she, you know, she, the, and her first obligation, we don't know whether, in other words, her obligation to bring Torim or Bnei Yonah, we don't know exactly what the Kohen actually did. So now let's take a look at that particular case. So let's think about what could have happened. So regardless of what happened, she was not koveya. She did not bring 3 olot simultaneously. So she now doesn't know what her 2 olot were supposed to be. She doesn't know whether they were brought successfully. So like the previous case, she certainly has to bring 4 additional birds, because she doesn't know whether her netter was of the same type as the Kohen sacrifices. She has to bring 4 additional birds. Now, the interesting thing is she only has to bring 1 additional ola, because even if she's koveya her netter, she never said that the ola in the kanchova has to match the ola in the kanedava. So the only ola she has to bring is a match to the chatos in the chova. In other words, obviously they have to match up. So she brings 2 olot as Bnei Yonah, 2 olot as Torim, and now she has to bring a 5th ola. The 5th bird is the match to the chatos in her chova. Because even though she says, I'm bringing a neder, say Bnei Yonah, and these were all these 5 birds, let's say that all the 4 birds that she gave the Kohen were Torim, even though the 5 birds were all Torim, the match does not have to be, she has to bring 3 olot. She does not have to bring all 3 olot of the same type. Now, finally, next case. This is all kavanidra if miminechad mishnei minim tavishesh. If on the other hand there was 2 minim, she has to bring 6. Why 6? Again, 4 like the previous case. She has to bring. She doesn't remember what she promised as her neder. She has to bring 2 olot tor, 2 olot bnei Yonah. But now, since there were 2 minim involved, we say to the Kohen, the first one you sacrificed was her chova. What type of chatas did you use? Was it a Torah or a Bnei Yonah? And the Kohen, of course, says, I don't remember. So she now has to bring her third bird that she has to bring as part of her large chova has to match the chatas in her chova. But the Kohen forgot. So now we get all the way up to six, because that first chatas that was brought in the chova could have been a ben yona. It could have been a tar. So she now has to bring an ola of both sorts to match her chatas. Okay. Now, final case. It gets worse. Nisanam la Kohen. She gives this to the Kohen. This is a case which I think somebody just wanted to get to this case. It's hard to imagine how this, you know, up to this point, the woman makes an obligates herself. She forgets what she obligates herself to. The Kohen doesn't remember. I can imagine the Kohen's doing a lot of sacrifices. Doesn't remember Tar B'nai Yonah, what he did first. Up till now, we can imagine that this could happen in real life. The last case gets a little bit, things really go awry. She gives them to the Kohen. So, by the way, this is not a case of kava, so we don't have to add the complexity of kava to this case. This case will get hard enough without having to be kaveh. So she gives her four birds to the Kohen. She doesn't know what she gave him. Torah b'nei yona, matched, unmatched. Ha'olah ha'kohen v'yasa v'nei yodem asa. The Kohen now, he doesn't know at all what he brought. He may have brought four olot. He may have brought four chataot. He may have brought two this way, two the other. All he knows is he brought the pairs together. But he doesn't know whether he brought the pairs as chovot. He doesn't know whether he brought the pairs as olot, as chataot. So again, if you go back to what's going on, she now has no idea whether she was Mekayim anything. So what does she have to do? She has to bring, obviously, as in the previous cases, four birds to Betar, to Bnei Yonah, to sacrifice her Nedava. And now she, unfortunately, has to also bring her Chova again, because it's possible that her Chova was not brought correctly. So it's possible that her chova was brought incorrectly. So what does she have to do? She has to bring two birds, two olot. Why? Because her chova may have been brought as two chataot. So it's possible, and we don't know what type of bird. So let's say her chova was brought as two chataot, and she now owes for her chova an ola. So now she certainly has to bring two olot. Why two? Because we don't know what type of bird was brought as her chatas. We're now up to six. Comes the seventh, v'chatas achas. Because why? Because maybe her chova was not brought as two chataot, not brought as a chova, as a chatas and ol, but it was brought as two olot. So she has to bring a single chatas. Now, fortunately, the chatas is the one that's koveya. So since the chatas is koveya, you don't have to bring a second chatas to match the ola. Oh, wait a second, that's only the Tanakama. Remember back to the last Mishnah in the first Perek. The Tanakama said we match the Chatas. Remember Ben Azai said we match what was sacrificed first. In this case, what was sacrificed first? First was sacrificed the Ola. Comes Ben Azai and says, poor lady, you thought you were going to bring four sacrifices, shtei chatos. You have to bring now two chatos. So this poor woman who started out thinking she's going to sacrifice four birds, forgets what she promised to sacrifice as the ola, gives the Kohen two pairs. He forgets completely what he does. Olot, chatos, he has no idea. The net result of all of that uncertainty, Ben Azai, she has to bring two chataot, a total of eight birds. Okay, and that is the last piece of halacha in Kinim. Amar Rabbi Yoshua, a little bit of a garat to end the Masechta, Husha Amru, Kishu Chai Kalo Echad, when an animal is alive, it has one voice, so to speak, Kishu Meis Kalo Shiva. When it dies, it can be used as part of making music seven ways. Ketzad kolo shiva, shtei karnav, its horn, shtei chatzotros, shtei shokav, shnei chalilim. I can make two flutes, and then orav, and I can take its or, I can make a tof, I can make a drum, Mayav, I can take its stomach, I can make Nivalim, I can make Nivalim, Shnei Mayav, from other parts I can make a kinar, the string, I can make the strings for the harp. Okay, so what do I have? I have Shtei Karanav, I can make two flutes, and this, that's a total of four, and then I make tambourines in the volume, I make drums, one, and I make one set, you can make more than one string, but we're not going there. So you make strings for the harp, total of seven. Now, of course, we had this nicely matches the last Mishnah, where we said it can go as high as seven. What about Ben Azai? The Asharim, in order to make Ben Azai feel good, af Samra l'tchela. So this is a little bit. You can use the wool to make a beged for the kohen to which bells get attached. So bells have to get attached to a beged. So the beged is also, in a certain sense, providing some sort of music. The bells in the Beis Hamikdash. So that's the one animal ends up contributing to the sounds eight ways. Rishim ben Akasha Omer, Zikne Am Aretz, Kol Zman Shemazkinim, Daitem Mitarefes Aleyem, Shnam Ar Mesi Sof, Sofal Nehmonim, Mitam Zikanim Yikov. The next couple of psukim later, it says that it uses the term Am Aretz, so an Am Aretz, as he gets older, his ability to reason decreases. On the other hand, avazikne Torah enam kain elakozman shemaskinim, as they get older, datan miyashevisol. If they have more ability, more wisdom, more insight, more ability to have patience, they have all of the attributes that make someone more valuable as they get older. Shenamer Yeshishim Chachmav Aruch Yamim Tvuno. That when they get older, they gain the patience, knowledge, insight that comes as the benefit of old age. Shotamin Chachamim become, in a certain sense, more valuable as they age. And that's the end of the Masechta.